It's an honor to be part of today's conversation. This call is a small effort to take all of you on a journey to a place called Gandhi Ashram in the city of Ahmedabad, India. When Gandhi chose this place to settle himself, he said, "This is the right place for our activities to carry on the search for truth and develop fearlessness." The ashram was a human lab where Gandhi tested his moral and spiritual hypotheses. And today, decades later, the ashram continues to inspire thousands of people in its experiments and pursuits in universal love and service. Several projects have been carried out over the years, to name a few. Manav Sadhana is a nonprofit that serves the underprivileged with a sole motto of love all, serve all. Moved by Love is an effort to create projects that are designed to shift our culture towards a greater sense of trust, connection, and community. Service Base has worked closely with Gandhi Ashram in hosting several retreats based on principles of generosity and unconditional love. These retreats have inspired change makers to redefine their inner compass of values and service. We will be hearing from these experiments through three of our very own Service Base volunteers, Bella, Birju, and Audrey, who have spent time in Gandhi Ashram and undertaking their experiments in service and transformation. None of these people really need an introduction because they're so active on Service Base and on Forest Calls. And I'm thinking that I will start with Bella, because Bella, we're going to go in chronological order. Bella was the first one to go among the three there. To introduce Bella, Bella was one of the main conspirers behind the creation of Forest Calls. She played a really big part in creating the space for all of us to come together on Saturdays and share these beautiful stories. And she has anchored Wednesdays at DC, and she's a very dedicated and gifted writer. In fact, yesterday, Daily Good featured her story about this author who writes anonymous love letters, and Bella had written a beautiful piece on that. Bella generously shares the gifts of her pen through incredibly written pieces, and she has featured many beautiful blogs on our Forest Call guests over the past several months. So Bella, it's such an honor to talk to you and to introduce you to the space. Can you hear me?
I can. Hi, Vinya.
Hi. I wanted to start off with asking you to if you can tell us when you went to Manav Sadhana and Gandhi Ashram, and then we'll take it from there, and then we want to hear from some stories from you.
Okay. Well, thank you for such a kind introduction. I was thinking about what I wanted to share this morning and feeling quite nervous about it, partly because it's been so long, I feel like, since I was at Manav Sadhana and the ashram. It was about a year ago that I came back from that space. But, you know, one thing that I was reading through some of my, something I'd written when I'd returned, and I remembered, I reflected upon this realization of this, being versus doing, that was really so hard for me to understand, and that I continue to try to cultivate day to day. But, you know, when I went to the ashram and went to volunteer with Madhav Sadhana last year, I knew that I only had about 5 to 6 weeks, and I really wanted to contribute something. I was just so eager to serve in some way because I felt that I would feel love. I would create love in myself and with others by doing service, and so I even had like a checklist, because I'd heard so much about Manav Sadhana, so I had a checklist of people to serve with and projects to contribute to. Mm-hmm. And so it was really difficult for me when I arrived, and I was like, well, what can I do? And some of the co-founders, the giants there, Jayesh Bay, Viren Bay, said, why don't you just and even I remember Madhu told me this. He put his hand on my shoulder and he said, "You know, Bella, I think you should just maybe it'd be a good idea to just spend some time inside the ashram, meditate, just kind of let your heart guide you for a few days." Mm. And I felt this frustration inside of me because my mind immediately thought, I can't do that. I only have 5 or 6 weeks, and that's not enough time to float around. I need to contribute. Someone on my checklist was a man named Raghubai, who I had heard so much about. And I was so eager to meet him and serve with him. And so Raghubai, he really is a love warrior, but if you told him that, he would smile, and he has this beautiful laugh, beautiful voice, and his eyes twinkle, and he says, "Everyone always tries to make me a hero, but I'm always striving to make myself zero." And he, when he was little, really young, he was infected with polio, so he lost the use of his legs. But that didn't stop him from wanting to serve, from wanting to give, from wanting to continue to cultivate the purity of his heart, I guess. And so what he does is he operates at first it was a tricycle that he could operate with his hands, and later he was gifted this beautiful scooter. And so he delivers tiffins, which are, these Indian lunch boxes to elderly people in the slums that are neglected and forgotten. And he piles on these tiffins onto his scooter and takes them into the slums and delivers them to people every day, even when it's 120 degrees. And you can find no one outside in Ahmedabad, or even when it's a huge holiday like Diwali, he's still serving. Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
I was just looking at the story that you wrote about him too, and we will make sure to send that on the email to everyone, the beautiful blog that you wrote about him.
Yeah. So I was going to say, I'm so sorry. I don't know why. I think I'm getting, I forgot what I was going to say. That's okay. What I was saying is that he can, part of what's so beautiful about the way he does this is he delivers these tiffins because he also wants to sit with each person and give them his presence, because they are alone so much of the time. And it means a lot to them to have someone, to talk with, to sing spiritual songs with. Mm. So the first day that I volunteered with him, I remember I went to bed so happy. not only because you're just happy in his presence, but I felt like I had contributed. I felt like I had done something. And, I felt like in my mind, I was like, I don't know, maybe I was checking something off. But without meaning to, without intending to, I ended up spending mostly the rest of my time with him, serving.
So you would go with him to, how did you spend time with him? Were you going with him to deliver food?
Yes. So I, helped him deliver the tiffins, in the afternoons, and then he also delivers tulsi plants to families in the evenings. And these tulsi plants are, spiritual plants and have a lot of meaning to them. And he knows every single family in the slums, and he knows about their challenges and their problems. And so he would select families that, maybe needed some love if they're experiencing challenges and disagreements, and he would bring tulsi plants to them and sit with them and pray with them and sing with them. Mm. And so I delivered these plans with him in the evenings, and we would just, you know, I would hop on a scooter and he would be singing and I would sing a little bit with him, and we would go to different parts doing this.
Mm.
And yeah, and it was, you know, I don't even think I realized this until I came back last year, but what I really learned in being with him and seeing how he lives with such presence and such purity of intention was just the ripples that he created, you know, from that heart-led being instead of this mind-led doing. And that was, yeah, and that's something that I still am very much working on. But I did learn this, you know, when you're coming from a place of heart-led being, you can't even, you can't measure the ripples. You can't even see the ripples that are being created. But it's just beautiful. So thank you for listening.
Yeah, and I remember I was at Manasama just last year. And when I met Raghu Bhai and when he knew I was coming from here, and first thing he spoke about was Bella Ben and how beautiful Bella Ben is and how supported he felt. And it's just nice to see how, you know, the giving and receiving kind of all melts into one beautiful thing, and both of you share this beautiful relationship.
Yes.
So, well, I know you spent a lot of time with Raghu Bhai when you were there. Could you also tell us, maybe, you know, was there other things you focused on, or something else you did while you were there?
Yeah, definitely. Something else that I really struggled with. Manasama, when you go there, there's just so much love in that space. There's so much light and joy. And, you know, I had the opportunity to go on a retreat with some of the, with Jayesh Bhai and some of the Seva Cafe volunteers and Moved by Love volunteers. And it was such a gift to be able to go with them 3 days over around New Year's Eve. But, you know, at the time when I was there in this retreat with them, I really struggled. There were so many times when I felt like I didn't belong there because I felt that the people around me were so pure and full of selfless love, and I just kept asking myself, what am I doing here? Why am I here? I don't belong here. And I just, like, because you see so much bright light and love around you, the darkness that existed within me became even more tangible and visible inside me. And I just saw this darkness. And it was hard, but I think one thing that I'm still learning is there is darkness, you know, in everyone. But responding, I guess this, I have this tendency to isolate myself and sort of become self-absorbed, but seeing everyone serve so much there in every little way, in every big way, whatever came their way, the opportunity to serve, and seeing that, and that inspired me to serve and just to be more present. And I felt like when I was more present, when I was trying to, I don't know, help in any way that I could, I realized that there was goodness inside of me as well.
Yeah. I wanted to quickly go back to Raghu Bhai, and as you were talking, I was thinking about him. As much as he does all these beautiful experiments in service, and, you know, he is a true love warrior. Did you, when you went to spend time with him and when you were delivering, like, for example, food with him, did you ever feel like, you know, this whole thing of here's this volunteer coming in to my space, and, you know, that whole thing of this person from the outside coming in and wanting to kind of give their it could seem cosmetic. Am I making sense? What I'm trying to ask you is, was he able to accept this outsider coming into his space and spending time with him? And how did he accept that? And how did, because he obviously built this beautiful connection with you, and that's, you know, how did that transformation happen? Or was there even a need for transformation? Was he able to just accept you right away when you went in?
That's actually an interesting question. Because I do remember the first day that I met him, I was really excited, and I said, I've heard so much about you, and I would like to volunteer with you. And he's very warm and friendly, but he was sort of, he kind of said, sure, okay. And I kind of got the sense that maybe a lot of people say that to him, and people do want to serve with him, and maybe they do for a day, you know? And so maybe he was used to that. So I definitely don't think that he or I expected that I would end up spending the rest of my, 5 to 6 weeks there with him practically every day. That just organically arose. And that says a lot about the heart-led being, you know, when you're being from your heart, serving from your heart, the ripples are just organically, you know, being created.
Beautiful, Bella. Beautiful. I hope we can come back to you and ask you more questions, but to keep up with time, I'll move on for now to Birju, and I hope we can come back to you. Thank you, Bella, so much for sharing. Birju, can you hear me?
Yes, I hope I'm unmuted.
Yes, you are. You know, it really feels funny introducing all of you to this space. I mean, everyone knows you, but just to keep up with the formalities, Birju is a long, long time volunteer of Service Space. He plays a very crucial role in creating the Service Space presence in the East Coast, and anchors Wednesdays at New York's. He's a big part of running the Service Space retreats in the East Coast. He's a very gifted writer. He blogs on Huffington Post. And I remember just, you know, getting prepared for this call today. I was listening to some past calls, and someone had spoken about how Birju meets all these high-power people as part of his work. I think investors and people in the, you know, the financial field, and so many different people. And I believe as part of his, when he has lunch meetings or when he has lunch with them, Birju always spends at least a minute in silence before he has his food. And I was thinking of how powerful that is to be sitting in these high-powered meetings or sitting with these different people. And then, you know, you take your moment to reflect and to, I mean, your own spiritual practice, and that shows a lot of strength. And just that says a lot about him. When I had gone to volunteer at Manav Sadhana, we were doing this little pilgrimage, and then a few of the volunteers said, it's Birju's birthday is coming up and we need to do something special for him. And then they had all the mothers sit together and sing a happy birthday song to him, and they did this video clip and they sent it to him, and there was so much of love, and everyone was thinking of him. So he's just such a warm person who inspires so many people with his experiments and just with who he is. So it's such a pleasure to introduce you again to this space, Birju.
Vinya, receiving an introduction from you is like receiving a warm hug.
I honestly am not doing any justice to any of you. You guys are rock stars, so forgive me for these very simple introductions. And I know that Birju, you were at Manav Sadhana over the summer, right?
No, I was just recently there over the holidays.
Oh, okay, yeah. And you spent time at the Gandhi Ashram, and then Birju also had attended a giftivism retreat in Pune. So I wanted to start with asking you, if you could please share like one story, one memorable story, and then if we have more time, we can come back and hear more stories from you.
Sure, sure. Grateful to share this space with everyone, and looking forward to hearing everyone's thoughts as this 90-minute period continues. I was reflecting on what I would share if I had only one thing to share, and I wanted to share one particular day with everyone. I was there for about a 3-week period in December, and one of those days was December 26th. It was the 2-year death anniversary of Ishwardada. And Ishwardada is the father of Jayashvai, and in many ways the patriarch of the entire community. It's for his inner shift that caused a lot of these ripples to happen as time went on. And so there was a gathering for him to remember his values and to try to keep them alive in whatever way that we all wish to have that in our own hearts on that day. And as part of that day, I was asked to say something about his life and its impact on me. Of course, my interactions with him were quite limited. So I was reflecting, and I realized that I had only met him once in my life, and that was for about 5 to 10 minutes. And yet, the ripples of his impact have been pretty deep. And it started with this gathering about 4 years ago, where there were a bunch of people that came to what they call the Environmental Sanitation Institute, which is all about how to teach people cleanliness. And in general, the Gujarati word is safai. So sanitation and cleanliness all kind of lumped into one word. And so all of these village folks came over to learn how to build toilets. And they went through a couple-day intensive course. These toilets are no ordinary toilets. They're 100% regenerative. There's no waste. And they work under a variety of conditions, both climatological as well as cultural. So it's a pretty in-depth process. And so as they go through and they learn all of this, the end of the training seminar ends with Ishwardada coming in, and he's the father of the toilet movement, the sanitation movement in India. And so there's just so much respect as he steps in. And he's just really hammering in the importance of cleanliness in life. And as I was listening to him, I realized that he was speaking to a root that could grow into something as time went on, and you kind of had to trust him on his word on what would grow. And so this was 2008, so I said, okay, well, I need to start trying to be more clean in my life. And, I'm an unclean bachelor, as some would call me, and so I've had to go through struggles in learning how to be more clean in my own life. I'm sharing too much, I think. But I decided that I wanted to clean my house a little bit more than I used to and try to take more of an active role. At the time, we used to have help come in and whatnot, and then we decided to stop that, my roommate and I at the time. And I thought, okay, I understand what Ishwardada was talking about. If you're clean, then you can not focus on the dirty things in your life and you won't get sick and what have you. That's wonderful. And so that was my thought of him. 4 years goes by and I see what has been happening in the community and in the Gandhi Ashram since. And one of the activities that I was involved in one day was just going on a tour group to go visit a museum. And I went with Ishwardada's son, Jayashvai. And we were talking about how you can serve in the moment, what cleanliness is. And rather than just talk about it, he looked at me and he said, there's a guy over there, he's sweeping. He's a janitor. He was sweeping the floor. He said, why don't you go and relieve him for a couple of minutes? I said, okay. So I go over there and I offer myself, and it was somewhat awkward. And eventually he relents and I take over, and I do a relatively poor job of sweeping, but I put my heart and soul into it. And during the time, I try to connect with him, just hear a little bit about what he's up to, why he's here in this space and time. And after about 2-3 minutes, our tour group is having to move on, so I'm pulled over. But I thank the gentleman for giving me the opportunity, and the look on his face it was an acknowledgement of recognizing that we tried to connect. You know, it's not like I made his life any easier in terms of the work he had to do, but I think there's a psychic burden that's relieved when you know you're not alone. And I felt that, and my sense was that he did as well. And so it was kind of a deepening of understanding Ishwarada's message that, you know, cleanliness can happen at the mundane level, but cleanliness creates connection within society if you do it in a way that's geared towards others. It's like, oh, wow, you know, I've got a new level of depth on what he was saying. And then there was a gathering that took place of about 300, 400 people came in to share messages and lessons from Ishwarada's life. And one of the people that spoke was Anarben, who is Jayashvai's wife and daughter-in-law of Ishwarada. And she was talking about the messages of Ishwarada's life, and she made this point of saying, you know, all his life he would talk about Safai, you know, cleanliness all the time. And what people didn't understand was that his definition of Safai was so subtle. You know, they saw the external manifestation. They saw that things became cleaner, you know, through the efforts of him and his compatriots. They also saw that there were some connections that were being built, those that were paying more attention to the subtle. But she wanted to point out that what he was really working on was internal Safai, inner cleanliness. What happens when you look in the far reaches of your own mind and you take your broom there? What does that create in a person? What does that create in society and community, et cetera? And it just hit me so hard, like, oh, that's what I'm here to do. I'm here for inner Safai. It was a very powerful moment for me. I thought I'd share it with the group.
Yeah, and I was just thinking of that street cleaner. You know, you gave him the beautiful gift of dignity. I mean, how many people would just walk up and take the broom and start cleaning? And that just, to give him that dignity, that gift, that precious gift of dignity, how powerful is that?
I felt equally connected at the time.
Right. And also you know, even when I've heard about Ishwar Kaka's work and projects, I've always just thought of it as, I know it's inner cleaning, but it just didn't make sense until now. Thank you for saying that so beautifully. I was always thinking about cleaning our external faces and toilets and whatnot, but it's so powerful when you also bring the whole internal cleaning in. Thank you so much for sharing that. I had kind of timed about, you know, 10 minutes for each of you before we went into the other parts. Would it be possible for you to give us a takeaway or an experience from the Gift of Wisdom retreat you attended in Pune?
Sure. Just as a bit of background for everyone. So there have been a series of retreats that have been going on in India since basically Nipun arrived in October. Geared around this idea of saying, how can we galvanize community? There's a lot of hearts and minds in that space, much like there are here, that are very interested in trying to step up their service, external, internal, and recognizing that if we can join those hearts, you know, the small scales into small times many. And what does that look like? And so one of those gatherings was a gathering in Pune, which is, I want to say about 80 kilometers east of Mumbai. And there was about 60 people that came to this gathering for 3 days. And it was all about what we're calling giftivism, or this idea of mixing the outer and inner towards radical generosity. And it was beautiful. Lots of interesting experiences, lots of positives that came out of it. One lesson that strikes me and that we see in this community all the time, this idea of a tribe, you know, everybody speaks, the circle has no center. And so over the course of 3 days, even though there were some pretty heavy hitter types of folks in the audience, everyone went through and had their moment to share what was coming from their heart. I find it to be quite rare in the other communities that I'm involved with, which You know, I would love to see incorporate this more and more, but it's so natural here. And what you see coming out of it, and now we're hearing about Wednesdays starting up in new cities all over the areas. Seba Cafe in Bangalore, I think Botik has shared something on that on the service space feed yesterday. Just in general, people feeling quite touched by it. One of the points that really struck me in the entire 3 days, so much happens. It's tough to kind of give an overall. It's more, maybe I can give a specific example. There was
Sure.
a session that we had on inner practices. And so there were three individuals that were volunteering or chosen to share some of the inner work that they do to generate the compassion, generosity, kindness that we all see externally. And one of those individuals was Nimishvai, Nimo Patel. And he was talking about some of the stuff that he was going through internally just to test himself, just to see, you know, what are my hooks? How can I understand what those are and not be blind to them? It's not to say that the hooks are bad per se, but the more blind we are, the more we act without even knowing what we're doing. And so, you know, one of the points that he shared was that he stopped looking at a mirror. For 3 months, he did not look at a mirror. He said, you know, it's amazing how subtle that feeling creeps in when you look in the mirror and you say, oh, you know, I just have to shave a little bit here. I put my hair this way. I think I should get some gel. Those thoughts start creeping in. And if I move away from that, what happens? You know, if I stop judging my own appearance, how does that impact how I start judging others' appearances? And so then he started going into the subtlety of judging and how being able to bring his intention all the time to how whatever he saw he was judging and how he could start to root that out over time and see things just as they are without necessarily putting his own lens on it. It's just deeply impactful to me to hear that. And you know, the other folks also shared beautiful insights on their own inner practices, but that particular one definitely stuck out to me as a person who spends time in the mirror more than I'd like also.
Wow. But I'm so glad we took that 2 minutes to ask you about that. That was so powerful. Thank you. So now we're going to go on to Audrey. Audrey, can you hear me? Hello.
Yes, I can. Hi, can you hear me?
Hi. So to again introduce Audrey to the space, Audrey who we've heard consistently on Forest Calls. Audrey is an accomplished writer and a gifted poet. She plays a very important role in co-creating Forest Calls every Saturday and writes beautiful blogs about our Forest Call guests. Audrey does several experiments in inner transformation, may it be spending several months in a Buddhist monastery or walking 55 miles from Berkeley to Santa Clara because it didn't make sense to drive 2 hours to attend a one-hour meditation. And also, I know Audrey on a personal level, and she is this amazing angel who bakes the most delicious cookies, leaves anonymous notes and anonymous acts of kindness behind. I remember this one day when I came home, I had a really bad day at work. I come in and, you know, I just, I come out of the bedroom and then Audrey's standing there with this beautiful bouquet of sunflowers and a cake, and she just starts singing, "Happy Tuesday to you." That was her song. And now every time when Tuesday rolls by, I think of that special day and I smile. So that's the kind of person she is, just spreading her love and smiles and goodness wherever she goes. Welcome to this call, Audrey.
Thanks, Vinya.
So Audrey visited the Gandhi Ashram over the winter break this and she just, in fact, returned on Wednesday, and I'm sure her insights and stories are fresh. So, Audrey, we want to start with asking you to share one big experience that you had while you were there.
Sure. When I think about it, there are so, it's almost like every moment is so precious. and I was only there for 2 weeks, just in these last 2 weeks over Christmas and New Year's. And so one thing that there's so many. One thing that stuck out to me, I guess, was it was on Nipun's birthday, actually. I walk in to the Environmental Sanitation Institute, which is the center that Ishwar Dada started, and there were all these children there kind of laughing and playing, and then I'm walking in closer into this field, and everyone's kind of gathered by this little tree, and they're planting this tree and kind of singing the song, and Jay Ishwar is there, and all these women are there who are living there for a month from, like, all these villages, and they're doing, like, a teaching training and women's empowerment training there. And I just remember thinking to myself, I've never seen a tree planted in such a, sacred, like, thoughtful way. And afterwards, a group of us, we were standing there, and I was telling Nipun and Jay Ishwar this, and Ishwar just kind of looks at us, and he says, okay, for the next half hour, until 2 o'clock, you have until 2, you are going to go and hug trees. And so we just kind of look at each other, and we go, okay. And he said, start with the first one over there. And so we go over, and we start hugging the trees, and at first I'm standing there, and there's like two teenagers there who are visiting, and like two teenage boys and another college student, and at first we start hugging these trees together, and you can kind of just sense there's like this sort of awkward tension, like, okay, we're hugging trees, this is interesting. But also, but then there's this kind of like trust that, okay, this is good for us. You know, this is something, there's something to learn from this. And then we kind of just start to split off and start just kind of internally walking around and kind of hugging each tree nearby. And as I started to do this, I started to notice how each tree kind of has its own stance and its own kind of nuance and its own, like, way about it. And then I started to kind of laugh to myself because I started to notice how each tree was kind of like a person, and you know, all with its own idiosyncrasies, all with its own personality nuances. You know, one bends this way, one stands up straight, one is really small, one is really tall. How they're all so different, but they're all so perfect in its own way. And it just made me realize that how there's so much I miss on a daily basis. There's so much how, if I can see these trees in this way, you know, there's everything is kind of like a reflection of something sacred. It's kind of like just this moment where I was starting to see, you know, this notion of God in everything and in everywhere, and even just from the tiniest little things, like at one point one of the teenage boys called me over, and there are these leaves, and he said, Audrey, look at these leaves, they're shaped like hearts. and it was just this amazing feeling to start to realize how in any given moment everything around me is sacred, everything around me is an expression of something sacred, of God, of, if you will, whatever that means. But it was just like this this realization of kind of how we're all connected, and when you kind of see the world in that way, you can, your heart just opens up and you can connect on a much deeper level with the people and the environments around you.
Gosh, Audrey, that is so beautiful. I mean, the next time I look at a tree, I'm going to think of this beautiful person just standing there and spreading arms wide and saying, hey, I'm here, you know? That was so beautiful. And before I ask you my next question, Kanchan, is it time to turn on the Q&A?
Yeah, maybe you can ask her the second question and then...
Okay. Okay. So what I wanted to ask you was, you know, Birju and Bella, I think, speak Gujarati, and I mean, even if they didn't speak Gujarati, it is easier to go to a place when you have some familiarity with a country and when you know how it is. But for you, it's a totally different place, new culture and language barriers and whatnot. And I know you had, you know, you might have had some concerns going to visit, just thinking, my gosh, how do I go to this like totally new place and how will they receive me? How will I be able to receive it? Can you share a bit on, how did that feel for you and what did you come away with in terms of culture and language barriers?
Yeah, it was actually, there were a lot of people who also spoke English around, so in any given moment I could turn to someone and ask for some help in translation most of the time, sometimes not. There was actually one night where a group of us, we paired off to different families and we stayed with a family in the slums, and so it was really amazing. One person went with a janitor, one person went with a street sweeper, one person went with a guy who sells chai on the streets, and I went with a vegetable seller named Chumperbin. And it was hard because her Gujarati was also, like, her language is also a little bit different, and I was just picking up some Gujarati words while I was there, just, like, a small amount. So I couldn't communicate that well, but in a way, it was kind of like this creative constraint where, okay, if I don't have words, what do I have? And I really wanted to just understand her life and to just connect with her. And so, our communication was kind of, there was a lot of charades and I would say something in English and try to motion it out, and then she would say something in her language and try to motion it. But at the same time, you know, at the end of the day, it's almost like the words didn't even matter because we both felt that level of kind of respect for each other and that level of open wanting to understand and connect with each other. And actually, before we left to go to her house, Jayesh Rai said, pointed to Chumperbin and said, "This is my sister," to me. And then he pointed to me and said to Chumperbin, "This is my daughter. So this is your aunt," he said to me, "and this is your niece," you know. And in a way, it was like we were already family. And even if we couldn't communicate, it was also just the humility of being in their home, their really humble home, and her daughter's cooking And I couldn't. I'm really bad at letting people do things for me. So I jumped in there and tried to make rotis with them, and it was really sweet. The roti I made was like this triangle, and hers were of course these perfect circles, you know, with very experienced hands. But when we sat down to eat, Chumperbin, you know, serves us, and then she takes the roti that I made, that's like this disfigured triangle, and she holds it with this like really like this degree of so much like care and love, and she says, "This is Audrey's roti." Like, she says, "Audrey's roti, I eat, you know, like I'm gonna eat it." And when you have that kind of respect for each other, it's almost like whatever you say, the words are kind of a side effect, you know, they're kind of just, they don't matter as much because you know that the intention there is sincere.
Oh, Audrey, thank you. And, you know, you said even though we didn't communicate, but wow, you totally communicated and you shared from the heart and you had so many beautiful experiences with them, and I guess language doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So we're going to move in, excuse me, we're going to move into the Q&A phase where we get a chance to ask our questions to Birju, Audrey, and Bella ourselves. So if you have a question for them, go ahead and press *6 to get in the queue. And I actually want to start it off. I had a super busy month, so I wasn't really able to follow so closely on what was happening in India. But one of the snippets that I did read was Nipun's account of spending New Year's in the slums and waking up in the morning with like maybe 50 mosquito bites on his head, and being grateful that the mosquitoes had a great New Year's Eve as well. And it actually brought back a memory of the first time I was in India with Jayesh Bhai and Nipun together, which was in probably like in early 2005. And we were sort of walking between the villages, just looking for ways to find the good in others and the good in ourselves and serve. And I think I was much more immature along the trajectory of my sort of service journey. But there were many moments when I sort of felt like, wow, there's something beautiful happening here, but these guys are crazy. You know, like I felt that over and over, just that this level of like doing something was so far outside of my range of experience. It just felt like insanity, and it really challenged me to push my boundaries. And I found that when I did that, that I would kind of discover or learn something new. And so I wanted to hear, I know that things can get really intense when Nipun and Jayesh Bhai are together. And so I wanted to throw out an open question to all of you about whether there were any of those moments that really challenged you, really pushed you, and how you engaged with them and sort of what came out of that experience.
That's a great question, Rahul. when I think about it, this is Audrey, by the way. It is kind of like every day was a very full plate, just being around so many people who have kind of dedicated their lives to service. And I think one of the challenges that I came up with that Bella kind of spoke about a little bit too is that when you're around so much goodness, you start to see your own, or at least I started to see my own limitations, and my own kind of places where I close up. And, you know, there are moments where your heart really opens up and you feel so grateful or connected, or you just are just buoyed by this level of love in this community, in this ecosystem that's just so, everything's so organic and spontaneous, but also everything is so wholesome and meaningful. And then there are also moments where I came across my own kind of insecurities and my own maybe ego moments where, you know, it's like, oh, I want to serve, but then it's like, you know, oh, let me pat myself on the back for being a person, for being able to serve. And when you're around people in this space, it's like, you know, Jayesh Bhai used to have this saying, love all, serve all. And then he changed it to love all, share all. Even in service, there's the ego. So instead of serving, it's sharing, because that's what we're really doing. And I remember on my last day, actually, Gubai, who Bella talked about, he has such a big heart, and he wanted to give, you know, send gifts to Bella and people. And he was like, come help me pick some And so I was like, well, I was sending out some gifts. And then I was like, oh, I want to get a gift. And Bella had actually gifted him a camera, and I noticed that he was using this like kind of styrofoam packaging that it came with as the camera case. And I was like, oh, you don't have a camera case. And so it was during that time, there was this big craft roots fair where all these artisans had come in to kind of display their art and share it. And it was this big fair. And so there was all this beautiful art around and crafts. And so I was like, oh, I'm going to get Gubai a camera case. So then I walked around and I came to the stall with, you know, these bags and this really beautiful, like, woven work. And I was trying to find something that could fit his camera. And so I was looking and I found this little bag with a zipper. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. This will fit it. And so then I got it and I went to him and I was like, this is for you. This is for your camera. And the funny thing is he was so, like, he so sweetly accepted it. And then And then I could kind of tell that there was like this hesitance. And then I was like, what is it? And he said, well, it's kind of like a woman's change purse. And I just looked at it and I was like, oh my god. I didn't even think of that. That's where I am, like, pat myself on the back. I'm getting Raghu, you know, I'm tagging Raghu Bhai with this, you know, a camera case. And I didn't even think, you know, for me, it was this beautiful thing that I, you know, had never, you know, I'm not used to seeing those types of things because I'm used to, you know, mass produced, machine made, you know, really whatever high quality camera cases. And I'm like, oh, those are boring. Let me get this nice handmade thing. And I didn't even think that it was, like, the design on it might have been feminine. It was, like, just a change purse. And so there is, I don't know, I was just in that moment, I was like, wow, I have so much to learn about giving because, you know, it's, like, I don't, it's, even if you give something materially, you're not necessarily giving as much as even just sharing your presence with someone. So there's just all these different subtleties, all these different levels of giving and receiving, and that was definitely a very humbling moment for me.
Bella Birju, was there any moments where you felt really challenged, and how did you respond to that, and how did you grow?
I'm happy to share. In thinking about my hooks, and I think that's really the place where I've been pushed. A couple of the hooks that were nicely called out in the last several weeks was food, specifically healthy food, and money. And on the food side, you know, I have this inner propensity to want to try to be a healthy person. So I try to eat healthy food and take care of myself, et cetera, et cetera. And here I was in these places that don't offer that possibility. And a lot of times one is faced with a choice of saying you can either choose your health or you can choose connection to another person or what have you. What are you going to pick? And again, I was put in that situation. And it was tough. It was tough to look at that and say, oh, this whole psychic personality that I've created. And of course, you know, health is not something that you can build and then you have it forever. Vigilance is key. And so here I am, this idea of, well, you know, the food is not going to be organic or anything close to it. And in fact, you know, you might get sick when you eat this. And, you know, is that something that you can live with? Because what you get as you pass through that is the ability to have a deep connection with the person that's in front of you. And once you have the deep connection, you can feed whatever, transformation or whatnot. You can grow together. And if you choose not to partake on the food side, you know, which is such a foundational element in building community, building culture, then you lose that opportunity. And so, you know, I would say that some of the time I passed that and other times I didn't. There's a lot of fear that came up. You know, sometimes you're going and you're eating food and you're really saying, you know, I'm taking a huge risk here. And the funny thing is, so 3 weeks I spent in India, and I look back on my time. I got sick once from eating food, and the food I got sick from was eating a chocolate cake in a a modern office. And all the times I ate street food or in the slums or whatever, nothing. So, you know, it is a lesson that I can intellectually grasp, and I wonder, you know, and I hope that I picked out the right lesson to actually be able to go there again and have a little bit less fear of you know, my own self.
It's fitting that chocolate is both your elixir and your kryptonite, Virju.
Hi, my name is Gina, and my husband Krishna and I visited Manasadhana for about 2.5 days in November. And one of the issues that came up for me is like, how do I serve? And this is maybe my challenge and something I wanted to reflect on with those of you that have volunteered. What I ran into was, like, do I try to specialize in something that I've done before? Like, and I've trained in medicine, so I was thinking about health projects. And when I talked to people there, they were willing to show me what they're doing and talk to me about the health projects. We also were there so short a time that we saw a variety of other things that they did and got to talk to the volunteers. And at one point, you know, it was really nice. I think it was Sunil Bhai said something like, you know, you don't have to volunteer in health. You can do anything. And my husband was very open. He took some time to sort out the grains for the Balvardi. They were making rice, and he was sorting out the stones from the rice. And it was a really nice story of how he connected with people there. And I think for me, I was trying to also decide on a future volunteering trip if I should come to Manavsadna or if I should go to another place that I've been, Seva Rural, where they're more focused on health. We were also trying to figure out what to do together. And part of it was also I was trying to figure out if there was something that he could do. And, in fact, the Sanitation Institute was kind of in his field. But I kept running into this issue of, like, do I really need to specialize or, like, when? How do I make myself useful? And there was also this element of, like, being versus doing. So I think I'm not being so focused on my question, but I'd be interested in any perspectives people have on sort of how do you serve and how do you figure out what you're going to do and how important is it that you get to that level of contribution that maybe you're best suited for? How do you get there?
Hi, this is Audrey. That's a really good question. Bridget, did you have something you wanted to say?
You can go first, Audrey, and then Bridget, you can share.
Okay. the first thing that popped into my head that was a lesson that I learned while I was there is the power of relationship in service. Because a lot of times I was just noticing in all the stories I was hearing and, you know, all the projects that are going on there, they all started with just talking. when I went to Seva Cafe and I started asking about, you know, how did Seva Cafe start? Seva Cafe is this pay-it-forward gift economy restaurant that runs completely by volunteers and, you know, people just give what they want and pay forward their meal to others. And the way it started when I asked, it was with a cup of chai with, you know, two women from the slums. That's how Seva Cafe started. And a lot of the other kind of projects, it was just going, you know, going to the slums or going to the village or going, you know, going and talking to somebody and just talking and sharing space in a way that's where you're very present and you're just listening and you just want to connect, not with the intention of doing anything, not with, you know, anything in mind or even wanting to serve. It's just an intention to connect and how from those relations, you know, whatever comes out of that is this, in a way, a very beautiful form of service. And what I found in other kind of spaces of service is that there's a lot of, like, oh, here's a need, let's address it in X, Y, and Z ways, and it's kind of this very organized, very kind of planned, like, way about going about something. And one thing that really struck me was just the way service is so organic there, and I think it's because people are organic. You know, people are changing, and relationships evolve, and so the needs of the times also evolve in that way.
I actually had, Gina, I had a similar sort of experience or initial approach when I was going to Manavsadna last year, because I've always been interested in women's empowerment issues and working on projects that build their confidence and self-worth. So I had learned about Gram Shree, which is a program started by an Arben there, which works with women to create these beautiful clothing and decorations while economically empowering them and spiritually empowering them as well. So when I first got, to the ashram, I was visited the work, the factory, I suppose, or a facility where a lot of these, where a lot of the training and products are created. And it was very mind centered. Even the experience of visiting the facility and interacting with the women, it was very, I noticed I was coming from a place of, okay, how can I somehow contribute to this? How could I create a project out of it? So it was all these questions coming from my mind. And given the short time that I had there, it sort of organically happened that, the next day after that, I ended up meeting Raghu Bhai, and then ended up being led by my heart, as I described earlier. And it was just funny what ended up happening, that the relationships that Audrey is talking about, because through Raghu Bhai, I actually, in going to the slums every day and delivering tiffins with him, he also introduced me to, everyone he knew, all the families, all the women, and I started to interact with the women more and just learn about their perspectives and their day-to-day experiences and the challenges that they live with. And through that, really learning about women's empowerment, in an organic way. And I started also having conversations with an amazing woman there named Jyotsna Parmar that leads the Women's Empowerment Center there. And she was asking me about, what I let, how I spend my free time in here in the States and trying to learn about my life here. And we ended up talking about yoga. It's like, oh, I really want to learn yoga and I really want to teach it to the women, and maybe you could come and teach us some yoga. And I immediately came from this Western mindset of not being certified to teach yoga, and I'm not a teacher, I just take the classes. So my immediate reaction to her was oh, no, I can't do that. And she had this confused look on her face, and she was like, why? You said that you've been practicing yoga for 3 years. Why can't you teach it? I said, oh, well, you don't understand. I'm not certified. I don't know how to teach it. I wasn't trained in teaching. And she's like, but you've been practicing. She was still so confused. And she's like, but you've been a student of it. And I was like, I guess so. Sure. I guess I can share with you what I've learned. And, so I ended up going to the women's center a few days later and just sort of doing yoga, being in yoga with Jyotsna Ven and a few other ladies there and practicing asanas with them. And then I started drawing out a lot of the asanas and kind of developing a routine with them. And I didn't know if it was meaningful to them until afterwards. And I knew it was so genuine when she just was so, she's like, I feel like I'm floating. This is so wonderful. This is great. And I was like, really? You got something out of this? And she's like, yeah, this is wonderful. I want to learn more of this and share it more with the other women that come to the center. And I was like, oh, wow. And that was literally the second before the last day, second to last day before I was supposed to leave. And so, to me, that was a kind of one kind of empowerment. For myself, I feel more than the women in the center, because I realized that we each have so much to offer, and it doesn't matter if you're certified or whatever. So it was, I guess, to summarize, it was just again, letting my heart guide my experiences there that led to the relationship building, that organically led to working with women in the end, because that's my interest. That makes sense.
We do have one other question in the queue, so we'll move on to that. And we have about 5 minutes left in the call, so we'll close after that question.
Okay, all right. Hi, hey, you guys. This is Gayatri here. Bela, Birju, and Audrey, much gratitude for your nourishing thoughts and experiences. Just a quick question. And Bela, thank you for creating this powerful space. So the forest calls, beautiful. So my question was, so how do you, what is your practice, or how do you sustain these ripples that you have, you know, gathered from your experiences? That was my question. Thank you.
I'm reflecting as you're asking, Gayatri, because I think it's a question I've been sitting with as well, because at an external level, the activities that I do on a day-to-day basis now are, of course, wildly different, not visiting tribal villages. But there's something about inner safai that has stuck. And so I've been continuing to play around with this idea of how do I bring love into life? How do I empty my cup so much so that I can become a bit more of an instrument for whatever it is to happen? And so I've been trying to do that. I've taken on this thing of, well, let me just see if I can start gifting regularly. I realize that a lot of times I have this minimalistic approach to life, but I thought, well, geez, what if I always had something in my pocket to give out? If I felt a sense of gratitude, right now I have nothing, that no candy, no way to tangibly share love with anyone. So what if I started carrying that? And I tried some of that this week, and that was really interesting in terms of generating connection.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. More morning and evening meditation practice has actually taken hold now for me. One of the points that we didn't mention here, but the way the lifestyle is playing out right now over there is ashram living. So morning meditation, evening meditation. It's like two Wednesdays every day.
Wow.
And that really starts to change one's thought process. And certainly I haven't been able to maintain that level of depth, but I have been maintaining day and night sitting. And that's had a pretty strong impact. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to kind of draw a line between that and other things that are happening. But you know, very interestingly, just to openly share a recent experience at work, which is still in process, so I don't know if I can go too in deep on it. But
and actually, so Berju, if you wanted to just make it super quick, because we do have one quick question from Richard, and then we want to close. So I don't want to cap your question too much, but if we can get the short version, that'd be great.
Perfect. So my boss pulled me aside a few days ago, and he said, you know, you're always talking about this love stuff and Gandhi and all this stuff that seems really interesting, but I don't necessarily think we see much of it in business. What if part of your job was to figure out how to bring more love to business? And so now we're having that discussion. And it's very hard for me to draw a direct line between the actions that I've gone through and this and what may come out of this, and yet there it stands.
We'll move on to the next question.
Hi, it's Jan calling, and I just have
Oh, hi, Jan.
Hi. Just a real quick question, and maybe it's a capper kind of question. The theme I seem to hear through all three of these wonderful stories is that when we go into a situation and we can't be competent and we can't feel like we're completely in control of everything, we're sort of forced into a position of vulnerability. And I'm wondering if it's that very vulnerability that creates the opportunity for connection. Would our folks like to address that?
Great question.
Hi, Jan. This is Audrey. One thing that kind of I thought about while I was there is that I feel like I sort of shifted into learning mode instead of work mode. And in a way, it was because in being there, I didn't have a set kind of plan or project I was working on or thing I needed to achieve. It was more just kind of a, let me learn from this person, let me learn from that person, let me just see what this is like. And so when I was in a space of learning and wanting to learn, I definitely was more in a space of vulnerability, like you mentioned, because I was kind of more open to seeing the possibilities and seeing what space I'm in, rather than like kind of, you know, when you kind of have a goal in mind or an agenda, you're blinded to the, you know, the other ways of seeing things, the other ways of doing things around you, because you kind of have something in mind. I would agree with that.
Well, we've actually come to the end of the forest call. Thank you all for taking time out of your Saturday mornings to listen and share. It's truly a beautiful thing when we can come together in that kind of a spirit. So to end the call, we usually like to take a minute of gratitude, a minute of collective silence to just tap into that gratitude and radiate it out to all the others who are in our lives and in our world. So we'll do just a minute of gratitude.
Rahul, quick, sorry. I just wanted to check if Vinya wanted to say some closing comments.
I'll make it really quick. Thank you for asking. I'll make it very, very quick. I just wanted to say, you know, coming back from Manav Sadhana, I thought there's just no way we can create spaces like this in this world. And if I need to feel that kind of love, I need to go to Manav Sadhana. But just listening to Bella and Audrey and Bridger today, I just wanted to say the three of you are creating that. And you just created that in this virtual space, maybe with, you know, maybe with being a servant ladder like Bella, who shares those beautiful stories of love warriors, or Birju, who's redefining a work culture by bringing in human interactions, and Audrey, who just said to speak the language of love and not to worry about cultural barriers. So the three of you are beautiful love warriors yourself who create these Manav Sadhana spaces around. And thank you so much for doing that and being you.